Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Quiet Riot is a rock and roll phenomena, widely known as the first heavy metal band to top U.S. pop charts. The Los Angeles Quartet became a global sensation thanks to their monstrous smash hit 1983 album, Metal Health. That album topped the Billboard album charts for several months, and the following up album, Condition Critical, went double platinum. The band has continued to record a total of 11 studio albums and tour throughout their 30-plus year history. Quiet Riot continues their historic journey with founding member and drummer Frankie Benali, who is joined by veteran bassist Chuck Wright, who has been in and out of the band since 1982, and guitarist Alex Grassi, who has been in the band since 2004. With their latest release, Road Rage, Quiet Riot introduced to the fans powerhouse vocalist James Durbin, who stepped in the 11th hour to give his imprint to the new songs. Musically, the new album offers exactly what you would expect from Quiet Riot: arena-ready hard rock with strong hooks and infectious riffs, along with a maturity in the songwriting that only a band with such a history and pedigree can offer. Quiet Riot have come back stronger than ever in perfect metal health with the new album, Hollywood Cowboys, with a release date of November 8th. Please welcome American rock drummer best known for his work with multi-platinum heavy metal band Quiet Riot, and the only member remaining from the band's classic lineup, and has been the band's manager since 1994, Frankie Benali, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Frankie.
Hey, how you doing? Great to be able to chat with you today.
Are you in California today? Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
you did tell me that.
I'm in Los Angeles. I've been up since 4:30 this morning when we got the automated call from the L.A. Fire Department to gather our belongings and be prepared in case they ask my area to evacuate because of the Getty Fire, which is not too far from where we're at. So air quality and the smell over here in Los Angeles is not great at the moment.
Oh, my. Can you actually see the smoke from where you are?
Yeah, I can see the smoke from where we're at, but
right.
You know, obviously none of the flames or anything like that. It's still a ways away from us, but because we have the Santa Ana winds this time of year, anything can happen. It's literally whichever way the wind blows will determine, you know, when you may or may not have to evacuate. So we gathered all our pets and, you know, have them all together, and we got the essential valuables all together, and you know, so far so good.
what causes these fires? Any idea? Is it negligence, or is it just the sun or hot dry weather? Or
it can be anything from negligence to a power line going down and sparking it.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of different factors. So far, they haven't determined what started this fire, but you know, they're fighting it aggressively because it's over by the Getty Museum and all the treasured art is there. But that that whole surrounding area, there's a lot of amazing houses in the canyon, so they're aggressively fighting it. But you know, the 405 freeway from the 101 to Sunset is closed at this point, so we're just waiting to see what's going to happen.
Unbelievable. You know, you would think this, you know, would, I guess there's no solution for this, really, you know, and it's just an uphill battle for firefighters, you know, once this happens.
Well, we have a combination of an area that doesn't get a lot of rain, so right. You have a lot of fuel for fires, and you're dealing with hillside and canyons. It's difficult for resources to get to it. So, I mean, just recently we had another fire last month that was not near us. But again, you know, we have to turn. Right now we have the air conditioner off because it just sucks smoke into the house. I mean, for the last one, we woke up in the middle of the night thinking that, you know, there could be possibly a problem because the house was full of smoke and it was just being sucked in by the air conditioner. So, you know, you have to go, you know, and roll with the punches with these kind of situations and just be aware and be prepared.
Well, like I mentioned to you before the call, our station's located in Lafayette, California. And they were in Paradise before that, and the station did burn down to the ground. The whole town of Paradise went away, you know. They blamed that one on PG&E.
Yeah, I think it was a power line that came down. Yep. And then sparked it off. It took them a long time to find out what the source was, but eventually that's what came on the news.
Well, back to music.
Yeah.
I watched. I was watching the old Johnny Carson shows last night on YouTube, and they had a whole segment on Buddy Rich. And man, that guy could play. And I know he's one of your idols as well, right?
Yeah, you know, he was the greatest drummer to ever pick up sticks. There's no gray area about that. There will never be another Buddy Rich. I mean, just amazing skill, amazing dedication, and what a performer and such a funny guy. He was the complete package.
You know, he was such a fast drummer. I've never seen, you know, I've seen a lot of drummers. I've talked to a lot of drummers. It's amazing how fast he was on the drums. And it's like, you know, he just played like a machine. You know?
Yeah, and he did it, and you know, he made it look so easy and
right.
So effortless. I mean,
exactly.
It was, you know, I know he worked for it, but it was a God-given talent. There's, again, there's never going to be another Buddy Rich. There's a lot of great drummers out there, past and mm-hmm. and present, but nobody can ever really equal what Buddy did. He was a one of a kind.
And he died so young. I think he was 69 years old when he passed.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But you know, if you know, you don't have a choice in these matters,
right.
and what he set out to accomplish, he accomplished, you know, a million times over. So God bless him for that.
Exactly. Well, you guys, I want to compliment as far as a band. There was some great music out there. I think that got forgotten, and that great music was from Slade. You know, Come On, Feel the Noise, Mama, you know, We're All Crazy Now. They're a great, you know, British glam band, but they weren't as big here in the United States, I don't think, you know, like they were in England. And those songs needed to come back because they were great songs, and you guys killed it, man.
Well, Come On, Feel the Noise was never a hit in the United States. They Slade had some success with it overseas in Europe,
right.
But they could never seem to break the U.S. And our producer thought that that would be, you know, for a new band, that would be a good vehicle for us to do it. Kevin was not. He didn't want to do the song because, as far as he was concerned, he only wanted to play, you know, songs that he had written.
Right.
So we actually never bothered to rehearse that song. So the drum track that you hear is the first time I ever played that song, and it's not the the same arrangement as Slade.
Right.
Not by design, but purely because I didn't really know the arrangement. it didn't have an intro like we did it. So it was to some degree a different animal. But you know, we're very fortunate to have that song, because if it wasn't for Come On Through the Noise, you and I may not be having this conversation
yes.
right now. And it was a win-win situation, because Slade made all the money.
Yeah.
And we became successful.
Well, you know, he nailed it on vocals. I don't think anybody else could have sang it as good as, you know, like, Nottie Holder. You know,
I completely and totally agree with you. Kevin did a phenomenal job on that. But you know, Kevin always did a phenomenal job on everything he sang.
Yeah.
So,
he was a great singer. He really was, and of course we lost him too soon as well. And I know you guys went back a long way. You're great friends.
He was my best friend,
yeah.
even through some of our, you know, own personal difficult times. He was my best friend for 27 years.
And, amazing.
And it's still strange to me when I get up on stage and he's not standing in front of me, because that's what I remember. You know, I was,
yeah.
you know, he's always standing in front of me, and he'd turn around. People would think that when he turns around and he would be chit-chatting with me, you know, most people think, you know, we're discussing what song we're going to play next, but in actuality, he would, you know, turn around and say, you know, do you think Waffle House would be a good place for dinner tonight after the show? So it was that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think I saw you playing in Steppenwolf.
You probably did. I was with him, I think, for a little bit over a year,
yep.
78 and 79, yeah.
Yeah, that's about when I saw the you know, with John Kay as well, but I remember seeing him without John Kay, and I forgot the name of the singer, but he acted a lot like John Kay. Was that the guy in your band?
Yeah, it was. His name was, Bob Simpson.
Right. He wore the shades and everything.
And it was Nick St. Nicholas on bass. And it was a real fun time. I mean, I was a fan. I loved some of the deeper tracks. I mean, obviously, I loved Born to Be Wild and Sookie Sookie and,
right.
and all those songs. But I really enjoyed, The Pusher and Don't Step on the Grass, Sam. You know, some of the deeper tracks. It was a lot of fun, and it was a great learning experience for me.
Well, I saw both bands, and I'll be honest with you, your band was better than John Kay's band.
Well, we had to try harder because we didn't have John Kay.
I think it was a small club in Maryland that I saw you guys.
Yeah, we played everything from,
yeah.
you know, opening up shows for the British band UK.
Right.
To play, you know, small clubs. I mean, we, you know, wherever there was a demand for Steppenwolf, we were there.
You also played in Wasp. And
yeah, I've recorded, I think, 7 or 8 albums with Wasp, with
yep.
the first one, which is my favorite, being The Headless Children,
right.
in 1989, and I did a world tour with them that lasted a year long. We did the first phase of the U.S., and then we did the first phase of Europe, and then came back and did the second phase of the U.S., and then the second phase of Europe, and it was a great experience. You know, Blackie and I are both New Yorkers, and
mm-hmm.
You know, we have that attitude,
right? Yeah, the New York attitude. That's right. Yeah, I got a lot of family from New York, and especially from Brooklyn. So my dad's from Brooklyn, so I know that New York attitude.
Yeah, well, you know, it's you know, if you're going to grow up in New York, you better have the attitude,
that's
or
right.
you're not going to survive it.
Exactly. And you also played with Faster Pussycat and some with Billy Idol, right?
Yeah, well, with Billy, I recorded a couple of songs on his U.S. debut, the Don't Stop EP,
right.
most notably Moaney Moaney.
Yep.
And with Faster Pussycat, right before their record became a hit, their drummer got busted, and they needed someone, and we had the same management, so the manager called me up and asked me if I'd be interested in going out on the road, and I had time to do so, and you know, I was happy to go out on the road. There were a crazy bunch of guys. It was a lot of fun on that tour.
Did you ever do anything like you know, really nuts, you know, in hotel rooms and bash them up or anything like that?
No, I did. That was never my thing because I knew that at the end of the day, the band would have to pay for it. And if I did it personally, I would have to pay for it. So I wasn't interested in getting involved with those kind of situations. You know, I never threw TVs out the window or any of that because there's a price to be paid. And besides, Keith Moon did it all before any other drummer ever did it. So I couldn't even compete.
Yeah, he was unbelievable, wasn't he?
Well, not only would he throw a television out of his hotel room window, but he would attach a number of extension cords so that he could throw it out the window while it was on. See, that's the difference between a pro thrasher and a juvenile thrasher.
Yeah, didn't he drive a Rolls Royce into the swimming pool and...
Famous hotel on Sunset Boulevard. Yep, the Hyatt House, which is called the Riot House.
Right, right.
Yeah, he did it there.
Unbelievable. You'll never see another Keith Moon anymore.
And the greatest story was Led Zeppelin. They stayed at some hotel and they thrashed the rooms and you know the hotel manager came up to their Led Zeppelin's manager Peter Grant,
right.
You know, for payment on it. And not only did Peter Grant pay for the damages, but he said to the hotel manager, "Did you ever want to wreck a room?" And the hotel manager confided on him, "Yeah, he would love to." So he paid him extra and let him thrash a room in his own hotel.
Hey, why not?
Hey, now that's rock and roll. That's
rock and roll.
Led Zeppelin.
Exactly. tell me about how did the hockey mask? It is a hockey mask, isn't it?
No, it isn't.
It's not.
How that came about is, you know, we decided not to have a picture of the band on the front cover.
Right.
Because it was a new band. Nobody knew who was in it. And we wanted to have something that was hopefully become iconic, which it did.
It did.
And represent the band and the albums, and that's how the idea came for that. But I always like to point out that it was done on such a small budget that everybody thinks that figure on the front of the Mental Health album cover standing in front of a padded cell, but if you look at it closely, you can see that it's nothing more than a U-Haul packing blanket.
It's funny. We got inside information now.
Yeah, that's professional, okay? You make do with what you have.
Exactly. I remember the Loving Spoonful, Summer in the City. You know that noise that sounds like a jackhammer was actually a wind-up toy.
So I didn't know that, but they had the great Dino Danelli on drums. He was like one of the first... New York Italian drummers to really make a mark and an impression. Great drumming.
Do you know Carmine, that piece?
Oh, I know Carmine well. I've known him for many years.
I've had him on the show twice. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's a funny New Yorker, and he's one of those historic drummers. I mean, his history is amazing, and I've always admired Carmine, especially the work that he did with the Vanilla Fudge and then with Cactus. You know, just a phenomenal talent.
Yeah, and he's done a lot with Rod Stewart too. Yeah,
absolutely. Do you think I'm sexy drummer?
There you go. I want to tell you, man, the new release, Hollywood Cowboys. I gave it a 5. It's going to be released November 8th. Let's talk about the album. I really enjoy the album. Now, I'm going to see. Let's see. My favorite song, I think, was Roll On.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because people keep telling me, you know, when I do interviews, how much they enjoy that song.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I always state the fact that, you know, I love the blues, and I started playing the blues when I was, you know, a young drummer. And the song, it's not like a traditional Led Zeppelin blues,
right.
But I like to think of it as more of a Robert Plant modern day style of blues. And for that song, I asked a really talented singer that I work with. His name is August Young, and I work with him on a side project called Mr. Jimmy, which we do, you know, classic live Led Zeppelin sets with Jimmy Sakurai, who is also Jason Bonham's drummer. drummer, and he did a phenomenal job. I sent him the music, and right. he wrote the lyrics and the melodies and sang background on it. And it's a real fun track. It's a departure from what somebody might consider, you know, classic Quiet Riot, but I think it's a good progression for the band.
I'd like to hear you guys do more of that.
Yeah, well, listen, I've already started writing material for a future Quiet Riot record, and I've already recorded two drum tracks, so Good. You never know what's going to come out of me from this whole situation.
Was that Jizzy Pearl on lead vocals?
No, that's James Thurbin is on okay. all the tracks, and James had written lyrics and melodies to five of the songs, but he didn't contribute to the other seven, so
right.
I went to August for Roll On, and then I went to Jacob Button, who's an incredibly talented songwriter, and he's the one that wrote the lyrics and the melodies for Don't Call It Love, In the Blood, which is the video track,
right.
Heartbreak City and Devil That You Know, and he also sang background vocals, and a couple of the heavier tracks like Change or Die and Insanity, I went to another friend, Neil Turbin, who wrote the melodies and the lyrics and sang background to that, and I had him do lead vocals for the demos. And I sent those to James, so all James had to do was copy what was there as a blueprint.
I love that song, man. And like you said, it's a little different than normal Quiet Riot stuff. But, you know,
yeah, and,
why not?
And the Japanese version has an acoustic version of it as well.
Really? Oh, I gotta listen for that. I gotta find it somewhere.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
It's the internet.
You're working very hard on Insanity.
Yeah, Insanity was a lot of fun. You know, I wanted to go back to one of those double bass drum tracks that we did on the first couple of Quiet Riot records,
yeah.
Actually the first three, and I wanted to return to a bit of that style, and I was very happy with the way that turned out.
Yeah, everybody needs to buy this album. It's a great album. Like I said, 5 stars. It'll be out very soon. It'll be out on Amazon.com as well.
So, yep, it's going to be everywhere, but you can find it on Amazon. You can go directly to Frontiers Records.
Right.
They have both their U.S. and their European store that you can pre-order. And there's a limited edition vinyl in yellow vinyl. So, you know, we pulled out all the stops.
You know, it's amazing. Vinyl has actually gotten bigger than CDs this year as far as
sales.
Yeah,
this year it's sold more vinyl than they have sold since 1968 is what I'm told.
It's amazing, isn't it? Maybe I need to buy that rack system all over again.
Well, I still have my old Pioneer system. And then, of course, I've got the updated turntable and speakers. So
right.
I still have all my vinyl that I started buying when I was a kid, when I was 14, even younger.
Mm-hmm.
So my vinyl collection is over 3,500 pieces strong.
Do you have plastic sleeves on all of them?
Oh no, I'm not that crazy. I don't mind the wear and tear. It shows how much it's been played and loved.
How about the old wood crates, you know, you put your albums in, you know?
No, I haven't done that in a long time,
yeah.
But I can tell you if you're really clever and you look hard on the IKEA website, you'll
uh-huh.
be able to find these like giant cubes that are just the right size for vinyl.
Really? Huh. The only thing, right now, they're kind of expensive, you know? If you try to buy vinyl, it's not like the old days at all. It's a lot more.
No, it's gotten really expensive,
yeah.
And as a matter of fact, yesterday I bought some vinyl myself, and I said, you know, I'm really glad that vinyl's coming back, except my wallet isn't very happy about it.
Exactly. You know? We used to get deals, you know?
Yeah, nope,
yeah.
No more. That doesn't. I mean, you a couple of years ago, you could still get deals, but
mm-hmm.
not now. Everybody's hopped onto the jack up the price.
I want to talk about the documentary. I didn't get a chance to see it. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, 3 years after Kevin passed away,
right.
My wife. she was my fiance at the time, and she thought that that the Quiet Riot history would make a great documentary. Mm-hmm. And to that end, she was the director and producer on the documentary, and I essentially just opened up all my archives to her, and I said, you know, you can use whatever you want. And it goes, it's pretty complete in that it's representing all the way back to 1975 and the Randy Rhoads era of the band, all the way up to real time, 2010. And, you know, there's things about it that make me laugh hysterically. there's things that, you know, make me cry, and there's things that make me cringe, but I didn't exercise any veto in it. I wanted it to be a real story and an accurate representation of what had happened to the band from beginning up to that point, so I let it all in. As a matter of fact, after the first month, I stopped watching any of the dailies, and I just said, you know, show it to me when it's final cut.
How'd you guys put that together? It seems like, you know, just insane work, you know, very tedious.
You know, my wife and her crew put an incredible amount of time, especially my wife,
right,
in the production and direction of that documentary. All we did was show up and play, you know. Mm-hmm. The deal I made with her was, you know, if you're going to come out on the road with our crew, you can film anything you want. Nothing is off limits, but you have to stay out of our way because I will run you over if you get in my way.
Now, there's a DVD that you signed for, it's a limited edition or something like that?
Yeah, well, if you go on the Quiet Riot, the official Quiet Riot website, which is quietriot.band,
right,
and you go to the merchandise store, you can still get the DVD, and I'm happy to autograph it, either personalize it or just autograph it. So you can go there, and you know, that's where you can get it.
Awesome. One big event that's got to just stick in your mind forever has got to be that US Festival.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. We originally weren't scheduled to be on it, and we got it at the last minute.
Right.
And we had played in El Paso, Texas the day before, and literally had to fly in, and then the next morning at 11 a.m., you know, we found ourselves in the center of rock and roll world when we're performing to over 375,000 people. And to give you an idea of what that looked like from the stage, there was no horizon. It was just people.
That's nuts. I can't imagine. You know, I could see playing, you know, inside to a lot of people because, you know, a lot of times you can't see the people anyway from all the lights. But you guys played during the day, so you got a good look at the crowd.
Yeah, we were the first band on. We had the option to either go on first or have Motley Crue go on first.
Right.
And I expressed my opinion to, you know, Kevin wanted to go on second. And I expressed my opinion to both Kevin and management, saying that, you know, these people have been there all night waiting for music, and whoever was the first band on, if they didn't suck, they were going to go over great, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, your day, it was you guys, Motley Crue, Ozzy, Judas Priest, Triumph, Scorpions, and Van Halen, and I understand Van Halen was there when you arrived, and they took you out drinking.
Yeah. You know, I had the mindset that I knew that we were going to have to get up early and go and start doing press even before we played.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, I excused myself to go to the bathroom and then just left Alex Van Halen's room altogether and went
smart to
my room and got some sleep.
You were smart. Frankie, here's a question I ask everybody, and I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Led Zeppelin.
Really?
Yeah, I don't even have to think twice.
So you would be the John Bonham of the band, pretty much, or?
Well, nobody can ever be the John Bonham of the band because he was rock's greatest drummer and incredibly unique. But I would definitely be willing to give it a go.
Yeah, Martha said David Bowie.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough when I was still living in Fort Lauderdale, mm-hmm. and I had my garage band that was a three-piece, and, you know, our set consisted of half cover tunes and half originals, and as it turned out, David Bowie in 1972 on the Ziggy Stardust tour was performing at the local shed, which is called Pirates World.
Right.
And the opening act bailed at the last minute, and the promoter from Concerts West, who I knew, asked me if we would do the show. So here I am, I think I'm like 20 years old, and opening up for David Bowie for one show on the Ziggy Stardust tour.
Incredible, huh? Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. It's unnerving when you're doing sound check and you see David Bowie and Mick Ronson and Woody Woodman at the monitor board staring you down.
Yeah, Mick Ronson is one of my favorite guitar players. He was a
great guitar player, great performer, a perfect foil for David Bowie.
When did you live in Fort Lauderdale? What year?
My parents moved there in, I think it must have been maybe 67 or 68.
Okay.
I was getting into a lot of trouble in New York, mm-hmm. and they wanted to stay on the East Coast, but as far away from New York as possible.
Right.
So Fort Lauderdale was on the East Coast, and as far away from New York as possible.
Yeah, I lived there in about 78, 79, around that time.
I had already left at that point.
Yeah.
After my father passed away in 74.
Right.
I had originally gone to LA in 72, and then came back to Florida. And then after my father passed away, about a year later, late 74, early 75, I went out to LA.
Yeah, I lived right off Oakland Park Boulevard. Do you know where that is?
I know it very well.
Yeah.
I lived actually in a suburb of Fort Lauderdale, Plantation. Right off by State Road. I forgot what it is now, but yeah, you know, between Sunrise and Broward Boulevard is where I was located.
My favorite record store was Peaches. They had a Peaches over there, and we used to walk to the record store, and it was really cool record store.
Because that's where I worked.
You worked at Peaches?
I worked at Synth Records and Tapes first out in Broward and then in Fort Lauderdale Beach.
How about that? I remember the radio stations, too. I remember She and...
WSHE.
Yeah, and Zeta 4 was another one.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I went to broadcasting school in Fort Lauderdale, actually. It was a CBS-owned station, and that's where I learned about radio.
That's great.
Yeah. Frankie, you have anything else you'd like to promote or chat about?
No, and like I said, you know, the Hollywood Cowboys record comes out November 8th,
yep.
and our video for In the Blood came out last Friday, and Quiet Riot continues to move forward. I'm going to be playing more live dates with Quiet Riot to finish out the year and into 2020.
Frankie, you sound great. I do have to ask you, how you feeling, man?
I feel pretty good, all things considered.
Right.
You know, I was diagnosed with terminal stage 4 pancreatic cancer on April 17th, and they gave me at that time 6 months, which means that right about now I'd be dead or dying. Yet here I am.
Yeah, don't listen to them, man. That's baloney.
But I listen to my doctors as what I should do, but ultimately I listen to myself and my own body.
You sound fantastic, okay? So, you know, Godspeed, and our prayers are with you, dude.
I truly appreciate that, and I truly appreciate all the support that I've received from, you know, fans and friends and people that I don't even know and never met, and
right.
it means the world to me. It's given me, you know, even more strength to continue the fight.
You're going to do well, man, and our prayers are with you. Thank you so much for being on the show, Frankie.
Thank you so much, and always thank you for your support of Quiet Riot, and for me personally, it means a lot to me.
All right, man. Take care.
You as well.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
For more information about Frankie Benali and Quiet Riot, visit www.quietriot.band or www.facebook.com/QuietRiot, and also on Twitter, www.twitter.com/QuietRiot. Purchase Hollywood Cowboys, the new album from Quiet Riot, available soon, very soon, at Amazon.com. Very special thanks to John Freeman of Freeman Productions for arranging this interview with Frankie Bonelli, and of course the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com, and please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business. Available now at Amazon.com. You will live it. Coming soon, The Rockstar Chronicles Series 1. Be on the lookout for that. It's in production now. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.